Chapter 13. Ezekiel. In another age, the chamber had housed 10 battle titans of the Legio Mortis, including towering structures of ammunition crates, loading gantries, repair cranes, and the arcane engines required by the Mechanicum in the maintenance of its god machines. The titans were gone, as was all evidence of their presence. But the huge chamber was far from empty. Part memorial, part archive, part museum, the hangar was now a monument to Abaddon's journeys across the eye and a testament to the inner workings of his mind. I felt Telemachon's subtle awe and Lior's hesitant wonder. I knew my own surprise would show just as plainly, had the others been able to read my mind as I could theirs. Never before had I seen a chamber like it. Abaddon had led us here after our meeting in the corridor, evidently unimpressed with Lahore's promise of thievery. The bones of an immense serpent creature were bound to one wall, displaying a beast large enough to swallow a land raider without chewing. The shortest fangs in its three-horned skull were the length of a chainsword. The longest were the height of a dreadnought. Every tooth's outward curve showed a ravine of sorts gouged into the ivory. Grooves to let blood spurt from a bite and to prevent the fangs remaining stuck in prey. I did not want to know what a beast like this hunted that required it to bleed its foes rather than devour them whole. Several of the skull's foremost fangs were shattered in the uneven breaks of blunt force trauma.
"I met that on Scorivale," Abaddon explained, noting my interest. "They live beneath the largest ocean, in hives of poisonous coral."
"The shattered fangs?" I asked, still staring at it.
"I broke them with my power fist," he said. "It was trying to eat me."
He walked through the chamber without touching anything, and we all followed suit. Order was a myth amidst that mess. Rotting corpses from more species than I could quickly count hung from chain meat hooks, while whole and partial skeletons were bound to the walls or left in heap piles among the chaos. Scrolls of parchment filled whole crates, while hundreds of data pads blinked in and out of battery-charged consciousness. Dozens of machines rumbled and hummed as they went about their function. On the deck, on the walls, on the ceiling. Machine parts and weapons were scattered across the deck in disarray. Salvaged suits of armor lay here and there, without any semblance of organization. Every Legion's colors showed in the cannibalized disorder, including a dozen in the cobalt of the Thousand Suns. Weapons from hundreds of cultures and eras were either preserved in shimmering stasis fields on marble plinths, or left to rust and corrode on the deck. I picked up the golden halberd of an imperial custodian, turning it over in my hands.
"It's gene-locked to the warrior who once wielded it," said Abaddon. "But I can activate it for you, if you wish."
I dropped it back onto the deck, still lost in what I was seeing. It looked as though a storm had swept through a war museum. The treasures of Abaddon's pilgrimage across the eye. A fortune in relics and cultural treasures, as well as a world of scrap and junk that held no obvious significance. Abaddon, with surprising courtesy, gestured one of his mismatched gauntlets straight up. Hundreds of generators rattled far, far above us, bolted to the Gothic arch ceiling.
"Do you recognize it?"
I didn't. Not at first. The room was too overwhelming. Most of the walls were bone, transmogrified along with the rest of the ship, but struts of browned iron and black steel worked in artificial synergy with the ivory architecture. They supported and reinforced the arching bone structure, providing the foundations for new machinery to be bound to the chamber's deck, ceiling, and sides. I saw turbine reactors, heat exchangers, Even what looked like a plasma cradle, though it was far too small to be a true plasma fuel generator. Three of the installations along one wall were plainly torture racks, complete with manacles and neural needles. There seemed to be no unity of form and function to the machines. The collection was eclectic to the point of seeming random. Everything was linked by bound cables and threaded through with grey crystals. Each machine held court over a cluster of lesser engines, cogitators, monitors, and generators. The entire left wall was given over to surgical tables and wall-mounted servitors armed with tools for bionic augmentation and the necessary microsurgery that always accompanied it. I looked at them all, at the chamber in its entirety, at the formation of the clustered machines. Most of all, I followed the lines of power cables running between them. They formed shapes, familiar shapes. Each machine held the position of a star. When viewed together, they were constellations. Scorpios Venenum, the poisoner. Feralio, the great beast. Jaima and Inaya, the emperor's handmaidens. And there, Sugitarus, the hunter, with his skirted consort, Orien, the huntress. I could only guess what astral significance the machine's alignment would produce if used in psychic ritual work. Abaddon had created a nexus of energies in more ways than one. "This is the night sky," I said. "These are the stars from the surface of Terra." My answer pleased him, if his slight smile was anything to go by, yet he offered no further explanation.
"Would you care for refreshment?"
Who was this disarming, unassuming pilgrim? Where was the choleric battle king who commanded the warrior elite of the most respected legion? I was at a loss for words. His inner sanctum was the hovel of a rabid collector, the workshop of a trained tech marine, the somber haven of a scholar, the armory of a desperate soldier, all of it and none of it. He had seen more in his isolated travels than any of us, and it showed here in this shrine of memories. The refreshment he offered turned out to be a clear spirit that left a faint burn on the back of the tongue. I'm being generous when I say it had the raw chemical taste of engine coolant. This beverage came from a barrel with warnings of acidic toxicity, poured into flasks of twisted white metal. I had the uncomfortable feeling that Abaddon was actually making an effort to be hospitable. Telemachon refused to touch the liquid. I took a flask out of courtesy.
"Oh, this is good," Lahore said as he drank the clear liquid. "My thanks, Captain."
I let my senses brush over Lahore's mind, curiosity forcing me to seek any sign of deception. Unbelievably, the World Eater was telling the truth. He liked it.
"It is adrenochrome," said Abaddon, "harvested from the adrenal glands of living slaves and mixed with several artificial compounds, including a formula that I developed while trying to synthesize ectoplasma."
I stopped looking at the false machine constellations and stared at him. "You tried to synthesize Etheria? You tried to artificially recreate the fifth element?" He nodded.
"Some time ago now, I abandoned the endeavor as ultimately futile."
You tried to concoct raw warp energy out of chemicals?"
"Not just chemicals. I also used what you'd call supernatural reagents. This is the inert result, of course. The runoff, if you will. Further filtered and blended with levels of alcohol that would kill an unmodified human."
He paused and looked at me for a long moment.
You seem to be struggling with the concept, Kion."
"I confess that I am." "What materials did you use?" He grinned.
"The tears of virgins, the blood of children. You're familiar with the mysteries of the warp, so you'll know how it always is in these matters. Symbolism is everything.
I removed my helm, just staring at him, unsure if he was telling the truth. The air carried the scent of rancid bronze.
Funny,
Lahore chuckled as he drained the rest of the drink.
I try. There was also venom from one of the Neverborn that manifested aboard the ship several years ago, which troubled me until I deceived it into containment. Another few noteworthy ingredients would be the corpses of several Psykers and Neverborn, left to slow dissolve in cooled plasma cradles. I then siphoned the remaining slime through hexagrammically warded purifiers.
He spoke as if detailed alchemical transmutation was a matter of daily chores. I wondered if there was any forbidden knowledge he had not at least dabbled in during his isolation.
I see, muttered Lahore. How enlightening. Sarcasm is unbecoming of a warrior, Leorvine. If it bored me to do it, it's just as boring to hear about the process. In truth, I've left all of those experiments behind me now. Curiosity forced me to try, but I took little joy in the work. Most of my time is spent off the ship, as you can imagine.
For the very first time, he took heed of the leather-bound deck of tarot cards chained to my belt.
That's an impressive grimoire.
The word grimoire was for more theatrical practitioners of the art than I, but I didn't correct him.
Are you going to drink that?
Lahore asked. I handed my flask to him without a word.
You should drink while you can,
he chided me. He had a point. Oh, the battles we have fought in the eye over something as simple and primal as thirst. I've spent entire years of my life subsisting on chemical compounds, cancerous lake water, and even blood. I have butchered brothers and cousins for 100 sins, but you cannot imagine how many have died to my blade in wars over clean water.
Strike me blind,
Telemachon whispered from across the chamber.
The Talon.
We moved over to him, where he stood before an armor rack, locked inside a shimmering white stasis field. The hulking suit of black cataphracti armor was unmistakable, cast in blackened ceramite and decorated with Horus's staring eye. The battle plate of the High Chieftain of the Justerin. Abaddon, in his age-bleached armor cannibalized from all 9 legions, looked a far cry from the warrior he had once been, wearing this ornate Terminator suit on the battlements of the Emperor's palace. Bolter scars and blade cuts showed across almost every centimeter of the ceramite. There was no question that Abaddon, before his pilgrimage, had always been found where the fighting was thickest. Separate from the armor, an immense lightning claw rested on a plinth of its own. Its fingers were silver blades, subtly curved, each one a monstrous scythe in its own right. Adding to the weapon's bulk was an ornate double-barreled bolter mounted upon the back of the gauntlet. Its ammunition feed ports were sculpted as the wide mouths of hungering brass demons. Scratches and dents marked the claw's black surface. The Talon of Horus. In stasis, it looked almost mundane. Lethal, vicious, deadly, but just a lightning claw. Just a weapon. Telemachon's shiver of pleasure was the strongest emotion I had felt from his mind since rewriting it. I sensed him salivating behind the burial mask. Then I saw why. Blood marked the Talon's blades. Dried patches of blood smeared across the bright metal claws. Telemachon's hand rested against the stasis field's repressor aura, as though he could simply push through it and touch the Talon it protected. Abaddon joined us, his inhuman eyes resting on the shielded weapon. For him, it held less mystique, yet more resonance. He had seen his Primarch father bearing the Talon into battle 1,000 times, lending the relic an air of familiarity. But he had been the one to tear the claw from his father's cooling corpse while its blades were still wet with the blood of... I exhaled softly, feeling the stasis field's misty warmth against my face. "When did you lock it in stasis?" I asked Abaddon.
"Within hours of taking it."
Abaddon was staring as well, though I could not say what emotion curdled behind his golden eyes.
"I never wore it in battle."
He started to key in a deactivation code to shut down the stasis cloud. My hand gripped his wrist with punishing force, but too late. Too late. The restraining field quivered and failed. Weapons have souls. The Martian Mechanicum has always known this, with their rituals to honor and appease the machine spirits of their guns, blades, and war engines. But a weapon's soul reflects in the warp as well. The very moment the stasis field collapsed and allowed the Talon back into reality, the weapon's spirit, a thing of inconceivable predation, clawed at my mind. The Talon's murderous, shrieking closeness threatened me, from the killing blades to the fat-mouthed gun barrels parasitically bolted to its back. Corpse stink, thick and hot and choking, emanated from the blood-stained blades in a choking aura. The dried, rich redness on the curving scythes pressed at my eyes with oily, liquid pressure. The weeping lament of a mourning father and a dying god was screaming raw in my ears, sinking into my skull. Every single cut, scrape, and dent upon the weapon had been earned on a battlefield where brother fought brother. I was half a dozen steps back before I even realized I was moving, one hand pressed to the side of my head to contain the stabs of pressure pulping my brain meat. My vision swam, blurring into uselessness. I gagged on the reek of genetically purified blood. Its taste drowned my tongue. My axe clattered to the deck without me remembering I had drawn it.
"Well, now..."
Abaddon's voice came to me from a great distance.
"What a sensitive creature you are, Kion. Much more attuned than I realized."
Mercy came, but not swiftly. The assault against my senses retreated, going grudgingly back like an ocean's tide. I pulled breath into my lungs, feeling them expand in my chest. The air still carried that gene-forged death scent, but it was no longer ravaging me. So many times in the years to come we would face the Blood Angels and their successors. And each time the descendants of Sanguinius would suffer their own breed of madness in the presence of the weapon that crippled the Emperor and murdered their Primarch forefather. I believe I felt a sliver of their pain that night aboard the Vengeful Spirit. I rose from one knee, wiping my bleeding nose and mouth on my armored palm. The blood looked black against the deep metallic blue. The stasis field was still down, the Talon's presence pressed against my senses, but in a whisper now, rather than a boiling flood. My brothers were watching me with varying degrees of comprehension. "Well, that was unpleasant," I admitted. They had reacted to the Talon's unveiling as well, though not as strongly. I could feel Telemachon's undercurrent of delighted revulsion at the smell of the bloodied blades, and the dull fire of Lahore's ticking, aching mind. Abaddon restored the field with the reactivation code. The discomfort vanished immediately as the weapon was taken out of time.
"Unpleasant, perhaps, but very educational," Abaddon replied at last.
He moved over to a workbench, where he unceremoniously tossed his bolter with a loud clang of metal on metal.
"So, Leorvine was saying how you'd come to steal my ship. Do go on."
A little late to lie, and I suspected he would see through any deceit, no matter how well I worded it. "Well, the thought had crossed our minds," I replied. Abaddon tapped his heart 3 times, in that formal gesture of honesty, habitual to so many of the Chthonia-born sons of Horus.
Don't try it, as I'd be forced to kill you. I need you far too much to let you die, my brother.
He paused, turning his golden gaze upon me again.
How is your sister faring, Kyod?
I was following the play of his words without truly grasping the meaning. He knew we were coming, and he knew who we were. He was aware I had intended to claim the vengeful spirit. Now he claimed to need me, for what I could not guess. But when he mentioned my sister, I felt my teeth clench together. Killing lightning wormed around my fingers, inspired into existence by my flash of anger.
Is something wrong, Kion?
Abaddon's eyes glowed a knowing gold. You are not taking her from me. The visible veins beneath his cheeks and in his neck seemed to run with a fluid darker than blood for a few heartbeats. I could scarcely read anything of his ironclad mind, beyond the facade of calm he used as a shield. But I sensed a flood of something like lava inside his heart, beneath the outwardly generous smile.
I asked if she was well. That's hardly a threat to take her from you.
Lihor and Telemachon were watching me now.
Your sister? Asked the World Eater.
Abaddon answered in my place.
The anamnesis. Forgive me, I assumed it was common knowledge.
Lihor gaped.
That she-wretch floating in the suspension fluid, down in the core. That's your sister.
I had no desire to discuss such a thing at all, let alone here and now. Lihor chose not to take my silence as a hint.
Why would you let the Mechanicum do that to one of your own blood?
There was no choice, I rounded on Lihor, forcing the snake lightning to dissipate into the chamber's stinking air. I had to be careful. Any sign of aggression would force his nails to bite. She was infected by one of the psychic predators of our homeworld. It pulsed its eggs into her mind, and the creature's young devoured half of her brain tissue before they were successfully removed. She could become the anamnesis or live in agony as a stupefied shell of the woman she was. Speaking of it brought it all back. The late nights by her bedside, cleaning her when she lost control of her body's functions. The endless weeping of our parents, who blamed the cranial surgeons for acting too poorly, and me for returning to Tisca too late. The night-long deep probes into Itzara's consciousness, seeking any part of her that remained untouched by the ravenous creatures and the gouging surgery that followed. I had given my younger sister to the Mechanicum outpost on Prospero, knowing their experimenters needed a living psychic human for the anamnesis conversion. I knew it was a risk, and that all previous attempts at creating the artificial gestalt had failed. But it was worth the risk, and I would do it again. It was the only choice worth making. Lihor and Telemachon were looking at me in a new light. Abaddon was looking at me as if he could see and hear everything I was thinking. He tapped his fingertips to his heart 3 times.
Forgive me, brother. That wound is fresher than I realized. I meant no insult or offense.
My teeth unclenched, but the tension didn't leave me.
It's fine, I lied. I am protective of her. Your loyalty does you credit, Abaddon remarked. It is one of the reasons I summoned you.
Summoned us?
Lihor realized it in the same moment as I.
Sargon.
The word bearer was no prophet. You sent him to Phalcus, to lure us here.
Abaddon spread his hands and performed a mannerly bow. His patchwork armor whined at the movement.
He is most assuredly a prophet, but yes, he was the lure. It was hardly a masterful manipulation. You aren't the only souls I've called. But you have the honor of being the first. I relied on Falcus's desperation and his wish to avenge his legion's fouled legacy. I relied on Ashokai's hunger for any shred of foresight. I relied on Telemachon's desire to confront Kion. I relied on Kion's empathy for a slain legion and his loyalty to Falcus, as well as his belief he could take the vengeful spirit by installing his sister as its machine spirit. And as for you, Firefist, I relied on your wish to seek something more than the life of a blood-maddened raider, and your hunger to find a purpose. In short, I relied on warriors who wished to be more than the legacies of their diminished legions. Everything fell into place with ease. Sargon was just the first breath that set the wind howling. Lihor's stitched features locked in a scowl. I thought he was going to comment further, but instead he growled,
"Don't call me Firefist."
The Sons of Horus legionary laughed at that, the filthy hair clinging to his pale cheeks.
"Very well, my brother. Whatever you wish."
As we continued talking, Lahore paced the chamber, examining the machinery and discerning each engine's function. His gaze lingered longest on the weapons.
"Don't touch that," Abaddon warned at one point.
Lahore put the rotor cannon down. Its multiple barrels whined to a halt. I gave voice to the question warriors of the Nine Legions had been asking for an eternity. "Why did you abandon your legion?" Abaddon had turned to work on his bolter, resting upon his workbench, oiling the mechanisms and flushing the detached components with cleansing solution.
"Horus's war was over. That war mattered. This one does not. With the real conflict left in ashes, why should I care about this meaningless, endless skirmishing between the Nine Legions?"
My blood was up, and not just in the aftermath of the Talon's revelation. Abaddon's effortless, endless knowledge of me and my brethren certainly was not easing my sense of caution, while his blithe dismissal of the lives lost in the eye since the beginning of the Legion Wars turned my saliva sour.
"Something to say, Kion?"
I was not imagining the challenge in his tone. "The Third and Twelfth have lost more warriors to each other's blades than they ever lost in Horus's rebellion. Ahriman has murdered the 15th. Few souls can even deal with the cursed 14th since their loss to the God of Life and Death. The 8th are here only in fragmented numbers at most, and the 4th rules over its isolated bastions, rising only to trade and raid on the vanguard of demonic machine hordes. Of the 20th, no one can say with any surety, but..."
"They're here," Abaddon interrupted with a smile. "Take my word on that."
"How can you be so ignorant?" I felt my voice hardening as I listed the Legion's fates to open Abaddon's eyes to the war he had ignored. "Your Legion is dead," I pressed. "You left them to die." He looked at me, not needing to spare any attention for the bolter he was cleaning. His gaze let me know I had not only failed to convince him, but I had said exactly what he'd been expecting to hear.
"Such strident words, Tisken. Yet how loyal are you to your own bloodline? How often do you return to that wraith-blighted world where Magnus One-Eye weeps atop the Tower of the Cyclops?"
My silence answered for me. His golden eyes flared with inner light as he continued.
"The Legion Wars will never end, Kion. They're endemic of life here in Hell, and they will never, ever end. More than that, they're the savage inevitability of those too proud and too wrathful to accept their past defeat. These aren't my battles. Shedding blood for slaves and territory. I'm not a barbarian to fight over trivial nothingness. I'm a soldier, a warrior.
If the legions wish to raid one another's hunting grounds for table scraps and steal each other's toys, then I'll let them. I feel no need to save them from their petty fate. They chose to fight and die in a worthless war. Telemachon was the one to speak. He had been the only one of us to fight at Abaddon's side more than once in the Great Crusade.
"You have changed," he said,
his soft voice matching the serene silver face mask. Abaddon nodded.
"I've walked the surface of every world here in this purgatorial prison. I had to learn this realm's boundaries, to see its secrets."
He looked back at the bolter, beginning to reassemble it now it was clean.
"Old grudges and old allegiances no longer interest me. Whether we wish it or not, this is a new age."
I released a breath I had not realized I was holding. "One last try. And that is all you have to say? That you are better and wiser than those of us still mired in the Legion Wars? Your gene line is practically extinguished, Abaddon." My entreaty did nothing but amuse him.
"Oh, listen to yourself, my brother. You argue and argue as though you weren't guilty of the very same sins you lay at my feet. Do you stand before me and rail against my decisions because you truly disagree with them? Or because you're here as Falcus's advocate?"
Lahore barked a laugh by my side. I sensed Telemachon was smiling behind his helm. "You misunderstand the gravity of the situation," I said. "Lupercalius is gone, wiped from the face of creation."
"I am all too aware of what happened at the monument."
For several seconds, I had nothing to say. "I do not understand how you can be dealing with this so calmly."
"Or should I shriek in childish rage?" Abaddon countered. "Fury is a weapon, my brother, a blade to be used in battle. Outside of war, it tends to cloud judgment. Why should I mourn a legion I chose to leave behind? I'm no longer one of them."
I could scarcely believe I was hearing these words from the former first captain of the Sons of Horus. Abaddon took my silence for capitulation and pressed his point harder.
"Answer me this, Kion. Are you still a legionary of the Thousand Sons? Leovine, are you still a world eater? Telemachon, whose legion name rings hollowest of all, are you still one of the Emperor's children? The Emperor and his failed sons gave your legions those names. Do they still ring proud in your heart and soul? Are you still the sons of your fathers, respecting them and embodying their failures? Do you see their flaws and weaknesses and wish to repeat them?"
"Sargon looked into the paths of the future and told me there was more to all of you than the call of worthless bloodlines. Was he wrong?"
His demanding accusations sobered the three of us. We lapsed back into silence. When you have 1,000 questions to ask, it becomes difficult to know where to begin. Abaddon paid us little attention, etching Chthonian runes on the casings of his bolter shells. Lahore continued wandering the chamber, looking at the biological components Abaddon was preserving in various fluids. Eyes, hearts, lungs. The gods alone knew where he had acquired them. Most weren't human in origin, and preserving the organs of Neverborn requires a special breed of patient alchemical expertise. You could walk for a week in that memorial chamber and still not witness half of its wonders. When he returned, Lahore drained another flask of our host's foul concoction. His dark features split into a smile.
"I'm no student of black magic, but have you added sorcery to the things you've been learning?"
Servos in Abaddon's neck armor growled quietly as he turned to regard us again.
"I'm used to being alone, so if I miss the nuances in your sense of humor, I can only apologize, brother." "What do you mean?"
"He means the Somnus Cry," I said. "Where is your astropath?"
"Ah,
I have no astropath. I have the brains of three astropaths floating in suspension fluid and wired into the psi resonant crystals that grow across the ship. You were poking at them a few minutes ago, Leorvine.
He gestured to a collection of organs and broken crystals in a transparent cylinder of sickly grey juice.
It's the beacon I use to find my way back when I return from my wanderings. One of the brains came from an Eldar priestess. She put up quite a fight, let me tell you. Sargon maintains the life support engine, though. I've never developed the expertise to keep it functioning myself.
Sargon is dead, said Lihor. He died months ago when the Emperor's children ambushed our fleet.
Abaddon turned back to his inscription work.
I doubt that, for I spoke to him only 3 days ago. He's in the vaults, several dozen decks below us. He goes there to meditate.
So Sargon lived, and had been instrumental in luring us here to Abaddon. That was another question answered before I could ask it. Just how Sargon had escaped was something I resolved to tear from the word-bearer's brain if I had to. Yet something more urgent pressed against my mind. Did any of your servo skulls detect a wolf? Abaddon raised a scarred eyebrow.
One of Russ's warriors, or do you mean the Canis lupus mammals of Old Earth?
The latter, a Neverborn, incarnated as a Fenrisian wolf. I've not heard from her since we came aboard.
I believe I'd remember seeing one of those aboard. I assume this creature is yours?
Yes, she is mine. Abaddon's laugh was a bear's wet, rumbling growl.
You call it she. How wonderfully sentimental.
Lihor availed himself of another flask of the oily brew. After a heavy swallow, a grim smile crossed over his patchwork face. He really did enjoy the stuff.
You know, we're still going to steal this ship,
he said genially.
Abaddon showed no surprise or unease at all.
A fine ambition. She's one of the worthiest monuments to mankind's ingenuity.
Telemachon came to stand by my side. He was the only one of us still wearing his helmet. Conversely, I sensed he was the one most at ease in Abaddon's company. I wondered if it was from my evisceration of his thoughts and emotions. I had reshaped him to encourage easy obedience, but he was disappointingly passionless so far. The last thing I desired was to engineer more servants similar to my Rubrikai. Already I could imagine Ahriman's words the next time he and I crossed paths. He was bound to consider my neural manipulation of Telemachon as the basest hypocrisy. What irritated me most of all was that he would be right.
You said you summoned us, Telemachon said. You haven't said why.
The former Sons of Horus Legionary finally set his work aside.
Forgive me, I thought that would be obvious.
Humor us, the swordsman said.
Abaddon looked into our eyes, each in turn. He had a way about him even then, even after so many decades alone, of conveying the most ruthless sincerity without a shadow of awkwardness. When your eyes met his golden gaze, there was a feeling of being honored by trust, of being taken into his confidence. Here was the first sign of the charismatic chieftain who had commanded the elite regiment of the Imperium's most renowned legion. His time as a pilgrim had layered wisdom and perspective atop the brutality of his former command. I wondered how Falcus and the other Sons of Horus would react to this reborn figure.
Horus, he said. Have you heard how the Neverborn speak of him? They name my father not for his victories, but his failures, calling him the sacrificed king.
I have heard it spoken, I admitted.
Sometimes, Kion, I wonder where free will ends and destiny begins. But that is a discussion we shall have another day. Horus cannot be allowed to walk once more. Not because of destiny or fate or the whims of the Pantheon. The first Primarch died in shame and failure, my brothers. My last gift to the Legion I abandoned is to let them die with dignity. The Emperor's children and their allies threaten that dignified end. Each of you is already primed to work towards that very task. You could call it manipulation if you choose, or call it a simple aligning of goals. I'm done with cold allegiances and temporary alliances. If I'm to return to the battles raging throughout the Eye, I seek something more real, something pure, a war that means something. Now I have the ship you want. I share the goal you wish to achieve. But both of those truths pale against the fact that I have the answers you require. Lahore was the one to bite at that dangling thread.
What answers?
Abaddon smiled, bringing dark light to his metallic eyes.
We have a warrior sorcerer with the heart of a scholar, and a swordsman with a poet's soul. Yet it's the bloodthirsty axeman who asks the questions that really matter.
He did not reach for his bolter as he made his way towards the huge doors, leading back to the ship's deeper innards.
Come with me. There's something you should see.